Do you have a better idea?
Yes, I do.
All right, we should be live. Nathan Bonnet, episode 28. I know my camera is a little bit fuzzy right now. I'm having to use the default laptop mic because my Logitech does not want to work because of a driver issue, which I won't really get into. So please forgive me for the camera quality, but let's go ahead and get into it. So I wanted to record this episode, obviously, before Game 4 tonight, kind of go over some things. I unfortunately was not able to catch Game 3 or much of Game 2 because, you know, the NBA Finals, their games are around 7 p.m., 8 p.m., and I work a lot of the night shifts at where I work, so I work 6 to midnight, so obviously these games at 7 or 8 I can't catch a lot of the time. But I did watch some of the highlights, did watch some of the breakdowns, some analysis, and I did catch some things that I wanted to talk about. So, first things first, obviously this is going to be a big defensive game. You know, a lot of people have been obviously looking at the three-point attempts of each team, and each team is getting beyond the arc a lot. But I think what we really need to focus on as well is the defensive capabilities of both teams, especially whenever it comes to Steph Curry, because a lot of people right now are ignoring Steph Curry's defense, and that's been talked about a little bit, but I really want to break that down. So I put in my notes here, if we go to the defensive rating leaders this season, which I actually have pulled up here, as you can see, Steph Curry is actually the 13th leader in defensive rating. So that's nothing to sneeze at. And he is also 21st in steals this season and has recently moved into the 10th spot all time in finals steals as well. Now, of course, Curry has been to the finals a little bit. A couple times, so he's going to have more opportunities to get steals. But again, he is 10th all-time in final steals right now, and so his defense should not be ignored. But there are three reasons why I think nobody is really talking about Curry's defense. Number one, obviously, is his offense. A lot of people are going to focus more on Curry's offense than his defense, with him moving into top all-time in 3 points. You know, he's known as being one of the best shooters the league has ever seen, and he's just really known for his offensive game, and that's going to overshadow his defensive game versus players like, I would say, Giannis. Giannis is kind of known for being a two-way player because he's constantly in the defensive player of the year ladder, but he's also scoring 40 points a night whenever it comes to playoffs. Versus Curry, you know, when he's shooting lights out from beyond the arc, everybody's going to be talking about that, and not many people are talking about his steals and his defensive stops and things like that. So, and the second reason for me is his teammates around him. So we obviously have Jordan Poole now, who is really good on defense as well, and the Warriors have always had Draymond Green as well. Draymond Green has won Defensive Player of the Year, and he's constantly being talked about his defense. Obviously, his defense has been shown these last couple games, which might even be too aggressive, but we'll talk about that later. Draymond Green is known almost as the opposite of Curry. Curry is known for his offensive power, and his defense gets neglected. And Draymond is known for his defensive power, and his offense gets neglected. And so when you have such a huge defensive power standing right next to you, it's going to be a lot harder to get recognized. You know, that's like whenever you're ninth in your class, but then your best friend is the fifth in the class. That would be my best analogy, is it's kind of going to get overshadowed a little bit because of the person next to you. Because Draymond himself as well, We were just talking about Curry being 10th in steals all time in the finals. Well, Draymond, in this same series, also moved up to 9th in all-time final steals. So, again, he's kind of having to compete with his teammate for that defensive spotlight. But the main thing that I want to focus on with this graph, and you may have noticed it already because I've had it up for a while, look at how many of these players are on the Celtics. 3 out of the top 10 and 4 out of the top 12 are Celtics players. We have Al Horford at number 2, then we have Tatum at 6, and then we have Smart at 10, and then Brown at 12. So it just goes to show that the Warriors, their game plan is going to be the same thing that it's always been, and they're kind of forced to do that. You're not going to be able to play a defensive game with the Celtics because they are just better defensively, and it's as simple as that. I mean, the numbers don't lie. They're right in front of you. And if you even just go to playoff stats, Boston Celtics have the best defensive rating in the playoffs right now. And I really thought that the Heat were going to be up there because the Heat have Bam Adebayo, Jimmy Butler, PJ Tucker. But the Celtics ended up beating the Heat in a 7-game series. And, we can get all into the Jimmy Butler missed shot and all that. But I think what's really important, again, is the defensive numbers here, which I've talked about in pretty much the last 3 episodes at this point. But I think we're really starting to see an offensive versus defensive game here. Obviously, the Celtics are taking a lot of 3-point shots like the Warriors, but that is because they're breaking down the Warriors' defense because their defense isn't as good as the Celtics' defense, and the Celtics are able to get stops on Curry and Klay as of right now. And I think that, I know this is sort of a hot take, but I honestly think that the Celtics do have a chance to win this chip. And everybody is going to, everybody right now that I've seen has pretty much said, the Warriors have this in the bag. The Warriors are going to win in 6. Warriors are going to win in 7 and so on. And I really do think that the Celtics can win in 7 games. And that is partly due to their coach. The Celtics have an amazing coach. He's worked under Pop. And from what I've seen, the Celtics do a really, really good job with their coach of figuring out what they did wrong whenever they lost. So whenever the Celtics lose, it seems that they just go, they watch film, they talk it over, and then the next game they come out and they're completely dominant. They were able to work on their mistakes, work on what they did wrong, and then they just have a blowout win or just a win in general. And I really think that goes to show the coaching expertise that they have over at the Celtics. But again, the same thing can be said for Steve Kerr as well. Steve Kerr also worked under Pop. Steve Kerr is really good at sort of honing in on whatever mistakes the players may be having. He's really good at his rotations, obviously. And that just comes with the experience that he's had as a coach. And I think this series really is going to come down to coaching more than anything, because we have, again, sort of an offensive versus defensive game going on right now, and we're just seeing a chess match, which is really good in the game of basketball. A lot of times we see in basketball just who can score better and who's more dominant, like Giannis in the finals last year. It wasn't really a matter of who's a better coach. It was just, how do we stop Giannis, and can Giannis overpower these people? With the Warriors-Celtics, as much as Curry is dominant and Curry is one of the better players in the league, I really do think that the Warriors-Celtics is pretty evenly matched, and it's going to come down to coaching. And it's really cool seeing this chess match, because from what I've been seeing in the highlights and from the analysis that I watched, it seems that the Celtics have refined their offensive strategy. What they tried to do was sort of space out the floor And they would basically have five people around the arc, and then they would just keep passing it until they got somebody open, which is sort of what the Suns were doing as well. But now, and in the first few games of the series and first couple games in the Bucks series as well, it seemed that they sort of changed that up and they tried to get Tatum or Smart through the paint. And it didn't really work against the Warriors because, again, you have Draymond there, you have Wiggins, you have Poole that are really good at defending that paint. And so the Celtics, again, comes down to their coaching. They watched the film and they said, how do we exploit that? And so what it seemed to me is that they try to trick the Warriors a little bit there. The first few games, they went through the paint and it doesn't work. So instead, they're doing almost what the Bucks did with Giannis, but intentional. And let me explain what I mean by that. So the Bucks' strategy is to have Giannis go through the paint and then have the rest of the players space the floor around the three. And they do what I and many other NBA fans call drive and kick, which is Giannis drives through the paint, and if he can't find an opening in the paint, he simply kicks it out to somebody on the three, and then they make the three. So everybody kind of huddles up towards the paint, and if Giannis ends up getting overwhelmed, then he kicks it out. But he only kicks it out if he needs to. That's the important thing because Giannis is so overpowering and dominant whenever it comes to that key position. What the Celtics are doing is they're doing it intentionally. They know that anytime they start to get close to the paint, there are a lot of Warriors players that sort of huddle up towards the paint to keep the Celtics players from scoring. And they do this on pick and rolls as well. Whenever anybody starts going to the paint, they rarely actually put the ball up in the paint now. What they sort of do is they go to the paint and then they dish it out to White or somebody else that is on the three that is open because they have three Warriors players in the paint. And the same thing on pick and rolls, a Warriors player will notice that a pick and roll is about to happen, and they'll go and they'll try and give help, but it's basically a fake pick and roll because then they just pass it back and the Celtics player is open and the Celtics player makes it. So I'm really bad at explaining this, so instead, let me pull up a video real quick. I was watching Thinking Basketball explain this, and he did a really good job explaining it. So what we're gonna do is we're just gonna go. I was noticing this whenever I was watching the highlights, and then I saw his video, and he was explaining exactly what I saw. So let me go to Thinking Basketball real quick, and we're not gonna watch the whole video, obviously, but I'll show a little bit of it. And I will also leave this video in the description for you guys. So
puts his head down like a football player and powers through good defense, and that's brilliant body control. Left,
me
and
get
there's
to
help, so it's a nice quick pass to the Dominican
See
Dirk
the
Nowitzki. The
22
man shoots
starts to go towards the
42% from
paint,
three in the
leaving
playoffs.
somebody open on the
This
three.
quick, early passing was on display on Boston's first possession. They know Curry is going to temporarily be on Tatum while Wiggins recovers. So JT immediately moves it to Smart, Klay helps over, and a lovely extra pass
And see,
sets up an
Klay
open
goes to
Brown
help,
three.
leaving him
These early
open.
passes are a counterattack to Golden State's help defense. Curry is sitting in Brown's driving gap,
So
so he
see,
whips it to
Klay
White
is
for a
going to
wide
help
open
here, and
three.
so Derek White is
As we
like open.
discussed earlier in the year, the Warriors like to shrink the floor and overload toward the ball,
Let me
and
see
that's
here a little bit.
whiplash for the Warriors' defense. Here's another version of the same concept, with Green sliding over to help on the pick and roll, so Jason whips it to the other side. White can attack the
Yeah, see,
closeout, but two
he
defenders
does a
are
really good
hit.
job at explaining it. And I'm not as eloquent with my words, unfortunately, but you get the idea. So the war. So again, that's sort of why I think that this series is going to be come down to who has the best coaching and who can sort of break either the Celtics breaking up the Warriors' defense and Warriors' offense, because again, the Warriors don't have as good a defense as the Celtics, or the Warriors picking apart the Celtics' offense because the Celtics' offense isn't as good as the Warriors' offense, just sort of relying on the other team's weakness in a way. So that goes into the other thing I want to talk about a little bit, which is Klay's shooting slump. So Klay has been sort of on again, off again in these playoffs, and Steve Kerr and Klay Thompson have both said that they aren't really too worried about it. But I wanted to talk about the reason why I think it may be happening. So you have to remember that Klay Thompson is coming off an injury for the past 2 years. And while he may be training, obviously, to get back into game shape and make sure that he's ready to play, and obviously the Warriors are doing well because they're in the finals right now, but at the same time, being 2 years off of an injury, that's going to come with its complications. And I think that's sort of causing this almost playoff fatigue for Klay Thompson, because again, he's coming off of not playing for 2 years, and all of a sudden he's in the finals again, playing more games than any other team. And that's sort of what we saw with the Mavericks against the Warriors, ironically, which the Mavericks just weren't really prepared to go that far. Their bodies weren't used to going that deep in the playoffs, and they were just exhausted. And the Mavericks did really, really well going up. I think it was 6 or 7 games against the Warriors. But they were just so tired, and that's why a lot of their starters weren't playing that many minutes, because they were just tired. And I think sort of the same thing is happening with Klay Thompson right now, where after 2 years of being injured, he's just simply getting tired, and he's missing a lot of his shots because of that. But he doesn't want to come out and say it, obviously. So that's why he said he's not really worried about it. All right. What else do I got on here real quick? I have some things for the draft, but I don't really want to talk about that right now. I want to save that for a later episode, towards maybe off-season. So Darvin Ham cleaning house. So I'm sure y'all saw Darvin Ham got hired as the Bucks' new assistant coach, and that is interesting. But what I find more interesting than that is that he kept Phil Handy. I really like Phil Handy. I talked about this as soon as the Lakers got knocked out of the play-in. I really like Phil Handy, so I'm glad that Darvin Ham got rid of Phil Handy. But I have a list here of all of the people that Darvin Ham let go as well, which admittedly I'm not too familiar with these assistant coaches, but he got rid of a lot of people. So let me pull it up real fast. So this is from Sideline Sources. New Lakers coach Darvin Ham has informed assistants David Fishdale, Mike Penverthy, and John Lucas III that they will not be returning to the Lakers. So I'm glad that he kept Phil Handy, but the rest of the assistants I don't really know that much about. Because again, Phil Handy, I feel like he has a lot of experience dealing with veterans, dealing with LeBron, especially in Cleveland. And I think it will be interesting to see if Phil Handy gets sort of a larger role, especially with the other assistant coaches gone now. What I did find interesting is that Darvin Ham said that Russ has a lot still left in the tank and that he doesn't want to get rid of Russell Westbrook, which I can see both sides to this, obviously. Obviously, there's one side being that Russell Westbrook played atrociously this season. But part of that is because of the rotations. So it'll be interesting to see how Darvin Ham sort of handles those rotations, does something different to make sure that Russ can achieve what he's capable of achieving. But at the same time, he does have a point in that a lot of people are taking this season very harshly when Russell Westbrook is only 33. You know, Kevin Durant is 33, and these players are still relatively young. And there's players like LeBron that are like 36, 37, if I recall. I don't know how Darvin Ham is going to milk the last bit of basketball in them, as he basically put it in his interview, but it seems like that's really what he wants to do. And Russell Westbrook isn't that old when compared to some other players that we've been seeing. So it'll be interesting to see how much Russ really does have left. Another thing I wanted to talk about real quick, which might be surprising, the fact that I'm bringing this up with the NBA playoffs on right now, but Zion Williamson, I did have it pulled up, but I guess it's not here anymore. The article went away. That's unfortunate. But the vice president of the New Orleans Pelicans said that they don't have a problem giving Zion the Supermax, and that it's going to be an easy decision for them to give Zion the Supermax. Versus a couple weeks ago, I talked to you guys about the fact that the GM said that it was going to be a difficult conversation to give Zion the Supermax. So that really stuck out to me, because it just seems that they're very, very flip-floppy on what they want to do with Zion right now. And I've always talked about this multiple times, and I know a lot of people don't like to hear it, especially probably the NBA themselves, because I'm sort of calling them out. But the NBA, at the end of the day, is a business. And so is every single team. What the team wants to do is they want to win a championship. They want to make money. They want people to come out and see their games. They want to sell tickets. They want to sell merchandise, and so on and so on. And so the best way to do that is to tell people what they want to hear. And so it sort of stuck out to me that, you know, the GM is saying, we don't know if we want to give Zion the Supermax, especially after his injuries. We don't know what he's still capable of. We don't know if he's going to be healthy. And then the vice president of the Pelicans turns around a couple weeks later and goes, oh, yeah, we're going to give Zion the Supermax. It's an easy decision. Zion is an excellent player, and so on and so forth. And it just seems that they're very contradictory with what they say, because they're just going with sort of the mass opinion and the court of public opinion, and they're just following the masses, which is what you have to do as a business. But I really wanted to kind of point that out and address that to y'all, so that y'all know what's going on. Because it did seem interesting to me the way that they just completely reversed on what they were saying before. So that's all I got for the Zion stuff. Obviously, I know what a lot of people want to talk about is Donovan Mitchell trades. So the interesting part of this is that the Utah Jazz actually said that they are not answering calls about trades. They don't want to hear about trades. But it's almost obvious that Donovan Mitchell will probably end up being traded. Kenny for real actually did make a good point in one of his videos that I watched recently, though. He said that Donovan Mitchell never came out and said blatantly that he wants to be traded. All he said was that he is unsettled in Utah. Now, unsettled can mean a lot of different things, especially with the departure of Quinn Snyder as coach. It could just mean that he doesn't know what's next for the organization, and he's a little worried, and he doesn't really know what's going on. That doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to be traded. However, with a lot of people anticipating that he's going to be traded, there's a lot of trade rumors and trade ideas going around, But again, the Utah Jazz organization said they don't want to trade Donovan Mitchell. So if Donovan Mitchell does end up wanting to be traded, I think this could easily turn into almost like a Ben Simmons or James Harden or John Wall situation where he basically forces his way out of Utah, because we've already sort of been seeing that. I'm sure if you guys are watching, you guys know CJ Hoop Talks. He made a post a while back about how Donovan Mitchell only passed to Rudy Gobert, I think it was 2 times in a playoff game. And so he doesn't really vibe with his teammates anymore the way that he used to. And that could be his way of already starting to force his way out, where he doesn't play as efficiently, he doesn't play as much team ball as he previously has been. And there's been, again, a lot of trade rumors, and one of them being with the Hawks, and the Hawks basically going all in for him. I think the Hawks really want another shooter to put around Trey, and so they offered to give up Bogdanović, Kevin Huerter, and Clint Capella, I believe, all for Donovan Mitchell. So we could see that Trae Young plays point guard, and maybe they put Donovan Mitchell as shooting guard just to have another shooter there. But that would be really interesting, because I don't know how Donovan Mitchell would feel being at the number 2 spot. But it seems that the Hawks are willing to give a lot to have Donovan Mitchell. They're obviously talks about the Knicks, because Donovan Mitchell likes the Knicks. I don't know much about the Knicks. I will be upfront with you guys and say that, you know, I'm not gonna BS you guys. I don't really keep up with the Knicks as much as I probably should, and I'm humble enough to sort of admit that. Just because, sort of like the Sacramento Kings, I haven't felt like the Knicks have done very much in the last couple of years, and so I haven't really kept up with them. So I'm not going to talk too much about the trade rumors with the Knicks, even though that seems to be the big one going around. One that really did interest me, though, was the Heat, because it seems, especially with the comments from Pat Riley, you know, Duncan Robinson has been making tons of money being on the bench. We've talked about this a little bit with JX Remy a couple episodes ago. Duncan Robinson is getting paid basically $90 million to sit on the bench. And Duncan Robinson recently has also come out publicly and said that he hates not being able to play. So it seems like he also wants to go to a team or a franchise that will play him more. And that money is still guaranteed regardless if he goes to the, stays with the Heat or not, because of, you know, his contract. But it seems that he definitely wants to get more minutes, and so the Heat will either have to give him those minutes or he'll go somewhere else. As well as Tyler Hero as well. Pat Riley said that Tyler Hero still hasn't earned a starting position, with while Tyler Hero just won Sixth Man of the Year, and he's putting up starting numbers, so I disagree with that. But I can also see sort of where Pat Riley is coming from. You want somebody really good to be coming off your bench. You know, that's why Manu Ginobili was such a great sixth man, because he was putting up starting numbers coming off the bench as well. And he was winning Sixth Man of the Year over and over. So Tyler Hero could be sort of that Manu Ginobili for the Heat, just a really, really good sixth man that's coming off the bench, putting up starting numbers. But it seems that Tyler Hero doesn't really see that far into the future with that, and he wants to get into that starting position, and he wants to have more minutes. He wants to just be in the starting five, be one of the first ones on the court. And so we could also see maybe the Heat doing something with Tyler Hero here soon. And Bill Simmons made a ridiculous trade that was saying, you know, give Duncan Robinson and Kyle Lowry for Kyrie, which I think that's pretty crazy. But at the same time, there were reports of the Nets possibly trading Kyrie, and, you know, people were joking of Russell Westbrook and KD being back together, and then LeBron and Kyrie teaming back up, because there were talks between the Lakers and Brooklyn, and a lot of people assumed, you know, Westbrook and Kyrie, because the Lakers also expressed interest in getting rid of Westbrook, which was really interesting, even though and then later Darvin Ham got hired, and Darvin Ham expressed that, again, he wanted to keep Westbrook. But I completely lost my train of thought. I'm sorry. Donovan Mitchell, that's right. So, Donovan Mitchell, I could see him going to the Heat as well for maybe a Duncan Robinson, some sort of Duncan Robinson, Tyler Hero shenanigans. I don't know when Tyler Hero's contract is up, so I don't know if he's available for trade yet. But Duncan Robinson, definitely we could see him going. And it's just interesting to see, especially because Donovan Mitchell loves D-Wade, and D-Wade loves Miami. And we saw that with Donovan Mitchell a couple days ago as well, saying that nobody is better than D-Wade and all that. And then Donovan Mitchell retweeted it and said, you know, D-Wade will always be one of the best shooting guards and so on. And it's interesting seeing a lot of Utah fans and basketball fans as well that are not focusing on Donovan Mitchell. I think Donovan Mitchell is the obvious one you trade here. But I saw some people saying get rid of Gobert instead and keep Donovan Mitchell, which I think is the dumbest thing ever, because you know, they don't really have a team chemistry anymore. And so obviously people are saying get rid of either one or get rid of both. But a lot of people want to get rid of Rudy Gobert instead of Donovan Mitchell, which I think is just really, really silly. Because Rudy Gobert, if I'm correct, has 3 Defensive Player of the Years as of right now. And once again, this season, we just pulled it up. I'll pull it up again for you guys. Has the best defensive rating this season. And so it's just really interesting for me to see people say, you know, get rid of Rudy Gobert when he's putting up these kinds of numbers. And again, I've gone on this rant so many times, but defense gets so ignored in this era of the game. And I think getting rid of Rudy Gobert would just be such an oversight of what he is able to do on the defensive end. And I don't really know what to add to that. I mean, the numbers speak for themselves. Rudy Gobert has the best defensive rating this season. Now, again, he didn't win Defensive Player of the Year because Marcus Smart won Defensive Player of the Year. But Rudy Gobert also has 3 Defensive Player of the Years, and he's just known for his defense. So then the question becomes, you know, is he worth it if he's not doing that much on offense and all that? So but the last thing I kind of want to talk about on here is small ball. So let me go to this great article I found. One of my tabs here will have it. I have a bunch of tabs open for this episode. Here, let me go back here and then I'll try and find it. But I want to talk about small ball some more, because it seems, once again, that the league is just getting smaller and smaller. But the problem I have with small ball is we keep seeing the height of the league decrease and decrease, because the league wants more and more shooters, which we've talked about many times before. and the 3-point is just going up and up. But we're seeing more shot attempts by larger players. We're seeing more shot attempts from larger players like Joel Embiid, Jokic, Giannis getting his jump shot now. And it seems that these taller players are becoming more and more versatile. So the question becomes, does it start to even out anywhere where we have these centers that are able to play like point guards? And there's a graph that I had somewhere that showed the difference in player efficiency based on position. And it was really interesting to see. And the reason I think the graph looked like that, where it sort of looked like, you know, small forwards and shooting guards were starting to see an increase. And I think the reason for that is because not a lot of people nowadays are fundamental five, you know, the fundamental five positions. And that's sort of how Popovich plays now. You know, we have a point guard, we have a shooting guard, we have a small forward, power forward, center, and so on. That's how the Spurs have always done things ever since Pop has been coach. But other teams, you know, you look at the Heat, you look at the Celtics, you look at all these teams that have gone far in the playoffs, and they don't have a super specific shooting guard. They don't have a super specific small forward. They don't have a super specific power forward or center. And it seems like every player on a roster now seems to have three different positions that they're listed as. They're listed as a shooting guard. They're listed as a power forward. They're listed as a shooting guard. A small forward and a shooting guard. And even centers. Like Evan Mobley, if you go to the Cavs on Basketball Reference, Basketball Reference at one point had Evan Mobley with his size listed as small forward, power forward, center. And so it's really interesting seeing how these positions sort of have become flexible, because you don't necessarily have to have somebody at that specific position anymore as long as you have five players on the field. And I think that goes back again to small ball, because even if you're, you know, 6'4", we can still put you at the center position and you'll be listed as a center, even though you're in no way at all a center. And so I want to go to this article that's really good by Brun Repeat that has some good stats here. So, as you can see here, this is from September of 2021. So, this is sort of towards the start of this season. So, things have changed a little bit since then, but I think most of the article still holds up. So, these are their key findings, which I want to read out. So, again, this is by Run Repeat. So, it says, the average NBA player is 6'6". And has never been shorter over the past 39 seasons. Point guards are the tallest they've ever been in league history. All other positions are the shortest since the 80s. So again, this goes back to what I was saying earlier, which is we can put some of these taller players at a point guard position, even though they might not necessarily be point guards, which is why the point guard is the tallest position and the other ones are getting shorter. 72% of the league is 6'9", or under 6'9", which is the most of the most percentage of a league under 6'9" in the past 40 seasons. And again, this is goes back to what I was saying earlier, this next point here. 40% of the power forwards field goal attempts are three-pointers, first time in NBA history, while centers are getting close to 20%. Currently at 19.5%. So again, we're seeing a lot of versatile bigs that are able to get this 3-point percentage that we used to not be able to see. You know, we a lot of players used to play like Giannis and just simply go through the paint, and that was their bread and butter. You know, we didn't see people that were 6 foot ten, 7 foot that were like shooting beyond the arc because it was just ridiculous. You know, it was like 2K stats. In 2K, anytime you make a player that is really good at dunking or really good at mid range, their 3-point percentage is always Their 3-point percentage is always like 15%. You know? So if we look at this graph here, this is what I was looking at before. So this shows the height over the past couple years, and hopefully you can see this well. So I want to point out some of the dips here. So just like, again, any business or any sports team, they do what shows success and they do what's trendy. So these significant dips here are significant dips from point guards and shooting guards. So I wish they had the years more specifically, but I'm going to call this dip right here around 1993 or so. So 1993 was Michael Jordan winning championships. Michael Jordan, one of the best players, I would say the greatest player of all time. And I know that's going to get a lot of hate from LeBron fans, but Michael Jordan is the greatest player of all time. And he played shooting guard. So we see this little dip here as he goes for his championships. And then it starts to rise again. And then it dips with some more championships. And then it rises. And then it dips. And then here we see a little bit of a dip again, which is around 2003. So again, we see a little bit of a dip around the early 2000s. And then Kobe got his championships around 2003. So we see a little bit more of a dip. And then it increases. And it kind of levels off here around the mid-2000s, which is when, again, we started to see more of a fundamental five. So, you know, 2007 with the Spurs, 2008 with the Celtics big three, and so on. And Dirk with the Mavs, and so on. But then, again, we start to see a massive dip here. And ever since then, it's been pretty much a steady decrease down. So I want you guys to take a massive guess of when this massive dip happened and why it's been on a decrease ever since then. This goes back to the very first thing we were talking about this episode. This right here is Steph Curry. This right here is Steph Curry getting drafted and his 3-point attempts and the league wanting more and more shooters, decreasing height as it continues to go down. And if we look at the average height per position, it actually seems pretty level. Like, it's been increasing and decreasing, and it's almost a flat line. It's not a flat line, but it hasn't been crazy up, crazy down anywhere. It's stayed pretty consistent. But if we go to free throw attempts per position, which is further down here, as we can see, there's this massive spike in centers from around 2005 to now. And we are also seeing a massive increase again in power forward as well. And the point guard actually dropped a little bit. And I think, again, this is just sort of the versatility, you know, the ability to play at different parts of the floor by our big men now, and being able to shoot everywhere, having many tools in the toolbox, and just being very versatile. I keep using that word, but I don't really know what other word to use, just being very versatile. And see, again, true shooting percentage, just from 2011 to now, in the past decade, look at this massive spike that we have here. And I'm sorry for audio listeners that can't watch this, but just the massive spikes that we've seen. And this right here is the main reason that people want shooters. Because look at this 3-point attempts, 3-point percentage, all that per position. So again, we see this these massive spikes around the MJ and Kobe championships. And then once Curry gets drafted as well, we see this massive spike that's just been increasing ever since then and hasn't really decreased at all. And I think one reason that we're also seeing sort of this decrease in height isn't just from the NBA drafting smaller players, but I think it actually is the fact that these players, there's also an element that these players have always been this height. And what I mean by that is the NBA is a lot more strict on confirming height now. So a couple years ago, this was very recently too, this isn't even that long ago, the NBA made some stricter rules about, you know, you used to be able to be 6'8 and say you were 6'10. And now, if you're 6'8, you're going to get listed as being 6'8. You can't stand on your tippy toes and lie that you're 6'10 anymore. You're going to be listed as 6'8. And so I think that's really decreased the average height of the NBA as well, because less people are able to say that they're 6'10. And that sort of idea as well, that there's much more height regulations whenever it comes to the combine and the draft and that sort of thing. But I really think we are sort of seeing more of a push once again that I've talked about before towards more of a small ball offense. The Houston Rockets tried it and it didn't really work out. And so, but despite the Houston Rockets not having it figured out, I think other people are definitely trying to give it a try, because big men, again, are mainly used for rebounds and blocks, but smaller players can be used for steals. And so it may seem like you're losing a lot of defense by not getting big guys, but you're also gaining sort of some defense and steals that people like Giannis, Rudy Gobert might not be able to get, but people like Drew Holiday would be able to get those sort of steals. And again, just the shooting aspect of it, and I'm sort of talking myself in circles now because I've talked about this on many other episodes before if you want to check those out. So I think the league is making a push to more of a small ball. But what's interesting is that a lot of the people in this next draft are power forwards and centers, which we haven't seen in a while. A lot of the players are big men, and we haven't seen a draft that's been packed with this many big men in a while, because once again, the draft has been filled with many point guards, shooting guards, and so on that sort of go on to be the franchise player for whoever they're drafted by. So that's really all I got for this episode, guys. I'll have more for you whenever Game 4 ends. Hopefully I can watch a little bit of it. But that's all I got for this episode, guys, and I will see y'all in the next one. Nathan Bonnett, episode 28. And be sure to check out my other videos, subscribe, all that good stuff. We're trying to hit 500 subs by the end of the year, and we're on 350, I think, right now. So definitely go subscribe if you enjoyed this, and I will see y'all in the next one. Peace out.
This is not okay. This needs to stop now.